This is Military Mondays with Major David Katz.
David, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. How are you doing? That story you told me just reminds me of my bicycle, a fall that I had.
Yes.
The only thing I was worried about is if anybody saw me. Those were the first words out of my mouth.
Exactly.
I was lying flat and my wife came to rescue me. And I said to her, did anybody just look around? Don't make it obvious, but did anybody see me?
And did anyone have a camera? You know, so you know what happened to me as well. I was on the beach and standing and talking to a lot of friends at the side of the, it was actually like, you know, when you're standing about knee deep in the water.
Yeah.
So maybe even, and then the waves coming out and in. Yeah. I'm standing and talking and there were some big waves and a kid was on a surfboard and came flying ashore. Knocked another kid over. That kid flew into me, unsettled my balance, and then the surfboard slid under me.
Wow.
So once I was really unbalanced, I fell so flat and so hard, and I was covered in water, and I just like looked up through this thing of the wave, thinking it's all over now, I'm never gonna, and all I could see was my friends. A combination of horrified and hysterically laughing on their face.
An embarrassment for your ego.
They weren't embarrassed. They were one of my friends is a doctor. I could see on his face that I wasn't dead or wasn't critically injured because he certainly didn't have his professional face on.
No.
In fact, I considered it to be very unprofessional the way he was laughing at me that wasn't, it wasn't a joke. It really, really is not, it isn't funny. Ian wants to know, Howard, did your fall happen in slow motion with the dramatic background music? Yes. Yes, Ian. That's exactly what I heard the music. I did hear the music. It was just absolutely awful. So David, I just want to tell you an interesting thing is, you're about to release a book.
That's correct. Yes.
What's it called?
It's, South Africans versus Rommel.
Mm-hmm.
It came out in hardcover a year ago. And that's actually the reason why I'm here. It's because Kathy Kaler gave me an opportunity to talk about the book a year ago. I think to the day almost.
Wow.
And, luckily it's being launched now in softcover.
Brilliant.
Will be available in February. Yeah.
All right. So I want to tell you something interesting straight off. David, I was at my parents-in-law on Friday night and I was talking about your book. Not because I've read it, but because I by mistake left it in the car and it's Shabbat and I couldn't get it out and I was frustrated because I wanted to start reading it, over the weekend. And I happened to...
Courtney, I would have helped you with it. I would have got it out of the car for you. Just
I don't know how you would have done that, but being a Shabbat and all. But anyway, because we were at the house and we were talking about it, my parents-in-law showed me a book, I wanted to bring it to show it to you. It was written in 1950. And, what it was is a book about the Jewish participation in World War II.
Yes.
And what was so fascinating. What was so absolutely fascinating to me was because it was written in 1950, it gave a perspective of the time. It was more interesting, in fact, to me to read how the world was thinking and what the world was going through, than it was even the details about the people involved. And the one thing that was so fascinating was it was a discussion where they had captured this Gestapo officer, these South Africans, and it happened to be, I think, somebody by the name of Major Berman, who was obviously a South African, a Jewish, this was in Italy now, a Jewish major, or general, I can't remember, and he said to this Nazi, why aren't we seeing any Jews? The Russians are close to Berlin, on the one side. Americans are moving across Europe. We're in Italy and nobody's finding any Jews. Where are they? And, the guy, they said that was the only time this Nazi officer became, defensive and uncomfortable. And he said, I remember seeing some decent Jews a year ago. That was his comment.
Wow.
But what was amazing about that, not his comment, was the fact that the world, the soldiers and people on the ground, whereas we now know that the governments knew what was happening in Europe with regard to Jews and how Jews were being murdered. People on the ground didn't know.
Absolutely.
And
not,
the fact that he asked the question, where are the Jews? It was perplexing. There were millions of Jews and nobody could find them.
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It wasn't well known to people on the ground, what was happening to the Jews. I mean, there were a lot of rumors.
Right.
There were escapees that went to Switzerland and told about the stories, but, it wasn't really a priority at that stage. And I must say something, it wasn't in the forefront of the world until about the 1960s, which I found very, very interesting. With the trial of Eichmann, that's when it brought it to the fore.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But prior to that, there wasn't a lot of talk about the Holocaust from 1945 to 1960.
Maybe people were just dealing with it. I mean, the aftermath, and it's a period that I'm more interested in some ways, is that period between 1945 and 1950 or 1952, because when you see Europe trying to sort of figure itself out.
Yes, and the aftermath of the whole thing.
And how people were trying to find each other, and they had no idea. I find that period particularly interesting, and I think not enough has been written on that period.
Certainly not. There's a lot of history still to be written about that period. Mm. And as I say, there were different priorities, I suppose,
in
those days. And these first-person accounts that you speak about, they're very important. And in the craft of doing history, it's known that they become primary documents. They're a testament of the people who were eyewitnesses to the events, and they are very, very important. And it's not going to happen again. You only get one eyewitness testament. So they
but
have
that
a
kind of conversation
document.
To me was just so fascinating.
Absolutely.
Because it was insight into the education, the information that was available,
and the thinking of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're pretty anachronistic if you think of it. You can't put where we are now and try and work out what's happening in those days. It's very, very difficult. You have to put yourself in the shoes of somebody that lived in those times.
Well,
and this is the best way to do it, is to read the eyewitness report of somebody who was there.
Mm. Well, it's fascinating because there's a concept in literature called intertextuality. And what that means is that we'll often view literature with a current perspective and education.
Yes, yeah.
So in other words, we'll talk about this example I always use, is we'll talk about Shakespeare's Hamlet having an Oedipus complex.
Yes.
Whereas we know that Oedipus wasn't it wasn't an established psychological term until the earlier part of the 20th century.
Yes.
So these things become important because we're looking back with a different perspective.
Absolutely.
And we do that, of course, with history as well.
Yes.
You know, where we look back and we say, well, how could that people be so, you know, A, B, C, or D? But of course, context is everything.
You need to judge a person by his times that he lived in.
Correct.
And if let's talk about racism quickly. If somebody was a racist in his times, then he was a racist. If somebody was not, if it was a norm of the times, and we judge him by today's standards, and by today's standards, he's a racist, then he's not. You need to judge somebody by the times that he lived in.
Well, we were talking about that, weren't we, when we spoke about the series The Crown, when Queen Elizabeth goes to Kenya and to Nairobi, and she says, you know, 50 years ago, I can't remember how many years ago, you know, Nairobi was a savage place.
Savage, yeah.
Yeah, and she actually, yeah, you know, when we think about
it. You cringe now.
You cringe.
It's
cringe.
It's
cringe.
It's absolutely cringe, really. But in those times, that was an accepted.
Yes, because the colonialists had come to Africa and civilized it.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
They had brought tea and everything.
Yes.
Fascinating. Unsigned says it was a South African plane that took the first aerial photos of Auschwitz in 1944. I had no idea. Absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
Really fascinating. Time is 8:38. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 High FM. We are chatting. We're talking Military Mondays because it is indeed Monday. Major David Katz in a studio. David, you mentioned over the weekend when we were chatting about various topics that there is rumor around a Russian military participation or involvement in Zimbabwe. Please, can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, there's a strong rumor that Russia is on the verge of setting up a permanent military base in Zimbabwe. To protect it's got platinum interests, it's got uranium interests there, and it's something that's been going on since 2015. But it looks like it's coming to fruition, that we could have a Russian military base near Harare, near the platinum mines and the uranium mines. Which
Incredible.
Is interesting. Maybe we're seeing a new scramble for Africa.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does that really mean? I mean, what does that mean to Zimbabwe if Russia is showing this kind of interest?
Well, first of all, we can see what's happening in Zimbabwe. It's quite a tragic situation with petrol prices running at about 45 rand a litre. I mean, the situation there is just not sustainable. And there are promises by Russia and China to revitalize the economy in certain ways. So I suppose they have to, there's a price to be paid for these superpowers to come in and start to revitalize the economy. So
what's interesting is when Zimbabwe was holding their elections, I was interviewed on Russia Today to talk about the various the candidates. And what it became apparent to me during that interview is that Russia definitely had a significant, I could just hear by the questions and the style that they were approaching this, there was most definitely a serious interest in who was behind whom.
Yes.
In terms of candidates, whether it was the United States, whether it was China. And I did get the sense that it wasn't just curious fascination that Russia or certainly people that were watching RT were interested in knowing because of a particular interest.
Well, Russia obviously traditionally had a footprint in Africa during the border wars and back in the 70s and the 80s.
Right.
And there's been a hiatus with them being absent from Africa for a couple of decades now. And there's certainly it looks like there's a move for them to come back in and have an influence in Africa again. And I suppose putting a military base down is a projection of their power. It's the first step to projecting power in the region, much as the Chinese are doing. The Chinese are building a huge or have built a huge base in Djibouti, I think a couple of kilometers away from the American base. So that's pretty interesting.
So you've got
a little country like Djibouti that's got a French military base, an American military base, and a Chinese military base within shouting distance of each other.
Right, and I would imagine it's all about natural resources.
Well, I think it's more than that, actually. It's about natural resources. There's a huge pirate problem in the Horn of Africa. So these bases serve to protect the very, very important shipping lanes that go around the Horn of Africa, and also these bases serve as a staging point for further actions within in Africa, and I suppose they are there also to fight against movements such as Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram. These bases have been used for that, and just as a projection of power. I suppose if you want an economic footprint, you set down your military footprint. So there's a number of reasons why these countries are coming back into Africa or establishing themselves in Africa for the first time.
Mm.
So something very interesting the other way, by the way, that Russia actually ran a colony in Africa near Somalia for a very short time, for a week or two back in the 1800s.
That's incredible.
It never came off. Yeah, they proclaimed the colony.
Because we never think of, Russia liked to take areas alongside it.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
So there's always a history to these things. So it's nothing new, but perhaps we're seeing a new Cold War starting in Africa.
Mike Luba says Russia can only be competing with China for control of the African resources. Zambia and Kenya have already lost major assets to China. So there's certainly concern about that, and we're reading more and more about these issues about China becoming fairly aggressive as they seek more of the natural resources, etc. He continues to say everything that China does is only for their purpose. China is an economic colonizer of Africa. What is the impact, do you think, assuming that this military base does go ahead in Russia? Is there an impact for South Africa, do you think?
I think there's certainly an impact. You've got a foreign power now on your doorstep, friendly or not. I mean, it's part of the BRICS, they must probably be friendly at this stage of the game. But there's always
I've been to Russia. I've never found any particularly friendly there.
I've also been to Russia. I found it fantastic, but you're right. The people are not friendly.
No.
I mean, it's a fantastic place.
Yeah.
But the people are not the friendliest people in the world. Certainly one of the cleanest cities I've ever been to. So maybe the implication of us is we'll have clean cities in Zimbabwe, hopefully.
But that'll be nice.
Seriously, the American first policy is putting Africa, not even second, must probably be third. And these powers are jumping in where America seems to be withdrawing. So that's another thing to consider. Mm. Is that America's got a couple of bases here in Africa, and they certainly have interests. But I wonder if that's the American the new American policy under the Trump government to sustain these military bases in Africa, or are they leaving and leaving a power vacuum and allowing the Chinese and the Russians to come in and put their footprint down where the Americans used to be?
Absolutely fascinating. I didn't think that we would see that. Time is 8:44. Major David Katz, thank you as always for a very, very interesting and different look at what goes on in the world of military.